Book of Daniel, chapter 12. And we are going to be finishing this series on Daniel. And I want to begin reading in verse 5 all the way through the end of the book. Then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, there stood other two, the one on this side of the bank of the river, and the other on that side of the bank of the river. And one said to the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, "How long shall it be to the end of these wonders?" And I heard the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand unto heaven, and swear by him that liveth forever, that it shall be for a time, times and a half. And when he shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people, all these things shall be finished. And I heard, but I understood not. Then said I, "O my Lord, what shall be the end of these things?" And he said, "Go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the end, till the time of the end. Many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. And from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, and the abomination that maketh desolate is set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Blessed is he that waiteth and cometh to the 1,335 days. But go thou thy way till the end be, for thou shalt rest and stand in thy lot at the end of the days." We have come to an end of a series that I have entitled, "What is God Doing Among the Nations?" And in the process, we have been granted a transformative understanding of the mind and ways of a sovereign Christ. He is in control, and He is governing and ruling over the nations. Nothing is taking Him by surprise, because it is the word of His power that is ushering everything to its appointed end. These things are not happenstance. They have a purpose and an end to them. And we have taken in this series, believe this or not, only 41 messages. Okay, now we were up in the 100th arena when it came to the Gospel of John. And in those 41 messages, we added an additional 8 where we dealt with spiritual warfare. So we've had a total of 49 messages here within this book. What have we learned? What has changed the way that we're living? Well, this book comprises a lifespan of this man Daniel. Are you ready for this? From the age of 17 to what age? He's in his mid to upper 80s. He arrives at Babylon as a young teenage man. And immediately when he gets there, he is confronted with a problem. And that problem dealt with eating of foods that were forbidden by the dietary commandment of God. And you got to remember that this man, along with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that this man was not just 4 teenagers locked up in a cell. There were probably tens, maybe hundreds of other young people deported from that nation. And Daniel stands out among all the rest because of his what? His wisdom and understanding. a wisdom and an understanding that was given by God. So immediately he is put under this crushing test. Does he pass the test? Yes. Within the next year, Daniel is going to be confronted with another test. So now he's 19 years of age, somewhere around that, and the king of Babylon, who was the king of all the known world at that time, the king of Babylon has a dream. And the amazing thing about this dream was is that he didn't tell it to anybody. And yet he brought in all the educators and he brought in all the wise men and he said, you know, he said, I had a dream last night and I'm disturbed about this and this is the God speaking to me and I want to know what that dream is. And all the wise men say, well, tell us what the dream is. And he says, uh-oh, no way. I want to see if you're really educated. I want to see if you're really connected into the gods. And so they certainly couldn't do that. And so they began to go out and kill all the wise men. And Daniel hears about it and he asks for reprieve so that he could seek the living God for the answer because he was concerned not only for himself but for his people. Amazing. At what age? 19 years of age. Does God give him the understanding? The answer is yes, and what God gives to him is what God is doing among the nations today. And what God is doing is comprised of four major world powers. You remember the first one? That ought to be easy. First one is Babylon. Then what's the second one? The Mede-Persian Empire. Then there's the Greek Empire. And those have already been. And then there's the fourth, which was the Roman Empire. That empire was going to be divided and weakened. And remnants of that empire are still around today. And one day it's going to be resurrected, as it were. And when that day happens, the Lord Himself is going to come back and crush it permanently. So, Daniel gives that interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar. Is Nebuchadnezzar impressed? Absolutely. And Daniel gets a quick promotion. Wouldn't you promote a guy like that? I want him on my side, as it were. And so Daniel is given this promotion. And then very shortly after that, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are put to the test by the Lord through Nebuchadnezzar because he gave an order that everyone should only ask favors of who? Of Nebuchadnezzar and not any other god. And so he made this big statue of himself. And I think if I remember the dimensions, we said it was higher than the ceiling. He made this humongous statue of himself and he claimed and he told everybody to bow down and worship it. So everybody's out there, all the counselors, all the staff of government, they're all out there. And here comes the music, and it's loud, and bow down. And everybody bows down but three. And they're 19 and 20-year-old men. You think they felt pressure? I can assure you they felt pressure. And they probably felt more pressure when Nebuchadnezzar, out of his mercy, gave them a second chance. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said, "We do not hesitate to answer in this. Our God does have the ability to deliver us. But even if He doesn't, we're not bowing down to you and to this statue." Well, Nebuchadnezzar, having a modest temper, got very irate about this. And he heats up that furnace and he loses some good soldiers over it. And he takes Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and they heave them down into this furnace. And guess what? They're walking around down there. And there's a fourth man and Nebuchadnezzar says he looks like a god. And they come right out of that furnace and they don't even smell of what? smoke. Do you think Nebuchadnezzar promoted them? Yes. But Nebuchadnezzar has a problem. He has a pride problem. And God determines that He is going to humble him, and He changes his heart from a man into a beast. That would be a fearful thing, wouldn't it, brethren? For God to do that to you or to me? Nebuchadnezzar functions as this beast till seven times are passed over under heaven. And then he comes to an understanding, and he writes an epistle and declares the sovereignty and majesty of who we know as Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Well, Nebuchadnezzar goes the way of all men, and his son, Belshazzar, takes the throne, and what happens? The handwriting is on the wall. The Lord has already decreed it. Daniel is now some 50 plus years of age, and he's already known what's going to happen. That Babylonian Empire is going to be demolished. The Persian Empire is going to be set up. And does it happen? Yes, just like God said. And folks, not to go through the whole book, but let me just ask you this. Does it happen like God said? Yes. So we can have the assurance that it is going to happen just like God said. So what is God doing among the nations today? God is preparing and massaging and moving and working among the nations of lost men and women to bring His Word to pass. And it will come to pass. But we also learned in this book that God is not only working among the nations, He's working with a particular nation, and that nation is Israel. And with that nation, God has determined 77s of years. And where are we at in that scheme of things? We're between the gap between the number 69 and the number 70. And folks, to go from 69 to 70, you've got to travel the gap. We're right there in that gap. Did the 69 sets of sevens, did it happen like God said? Did the Messiah come when Daniel predicted it, right according to sound chronology? Yes. So will those words concerning that nation happen? Yes. And one of the things that's going to happen to that nation is that there is going to rise up a man that is going to be Antichrist. And He is going to make a covenant with that nation, and He's going to break it in the midst of the 7 years, which would be 3.5 years. And this man of sin and this man of war will kill and seek to scatter all the remnants of those who obey the commandments of God and bear the testimony of Jesus Christ, Jew or Gentile. And it is called the time of great trouble or the time of great tribulation. Now, last Lord's Day, we took an overview of all that was going to happen. Would you agree with me that it was terrible? It was awful. And we're going to have brethren go through that time. Now, I did not address chapter 12 and verse 4, the last part of that verse, and I want to address that presently. And I'm only addressing it not because it has a lot of significance in the context of the writing, but because there is such great misunderstanding about what the Bible is saying. You'll notice in verse 4 that the angel commands Daniel to shut up the words and seal the book. Now, what he's telling Daniel to do is to write down this revelation that has been given to him, to seal it up so that it would be preserved how long? All the way to the time of those days. So that the brethren in those days would be able to read not only in Hebrew and Aramaic, but not only read that, but would be able to read sound translations into their own language of those words and be strengthened in those days. So Daniel goes back, he writes down that revelation, he seals it up for preservation until the end, verse 4, even to the time of the end. And folks, we're living in the last what? We're living in those last days, and we, because of Daniel's labor and because of the Lord's graciousness, we are reading those words. We are fulfilling those words in verse 4. Now, what's going to happen in those days? Well, the Bible says, many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. Now, what is he saying here? Well, he's not saying this. He's not saying that there's going to be airplanes. He's not saying that there's going to be dragsters that go really, really fast. He's not saying that there's going to be rockets that zoom at hundreds and hundreds of miles per hour to be able to break the boundaries of gravity and go out into space. He's even not saying, if you're an exerciser, that you're going to be able to run fast. What is he saying here? Well, let's look at three passages that help us where this term is used. Go back to 2 Chronicles chapter 16. 2 Chronicles chapter 16. And let's just look at the context of how this is used, and this will help us. 2 Chronicles 16 and verse 9. This is probably a familiar verse to many of us. The Bible says, for the eyes of the Lord, now here's our English translated phrase, run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong in the behalf of them whose heart is perfect toward him. All right, now let's look at that passage. First of all, is the passage teaching that the Lord is going to move very fast? Folks, what's running to and fro in verse 9? His what? His eyes. Okay? His eyes are running to and fro, and his eyes are focused on what sphere? The whole earth. Okay? His eyes are what throughout the whole earth? What's he doing? He is searching, isn't he? For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth. The eyes of the Lord, they're searching. They're running throughout all the sphere of the earth in order to do something. To do what? To show himself strong on the behalf of those whose heart is perfect toward him. So what he's doing is his eyes are focused on all the earth, and his eyes are running to and fro. It's searching throughout all mankind on the earth, and it rests on the man whose heart is perfect toward him, and God delights, when he knows that man, he delights to show himself strong on that man's behalf. So the point here with this, it seems that the passage is talking about seeking to discover or to demonstrate something. He's searching out those things. Now, go to Jeremiah chapter 5. Because here we have the word used again. Jeremiah chapter 5. And in this context, it begins verse 1. Run ye to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem, and see now, and know, and seek in the broad places thereof, if you could find a man, if there be any that executeth judgment, that seeketh the truth, and I will pardon it. All right, what's he saying here? Is he saying there's going to be motor scooters that are zooming around? No, what's he saying? What's Jeremiah saying to, if you were living in his day, what is he saying to you? He's saying, you go right outside the door of your house and you search throughout all the streets of Jerusalem, right? What are you looking for? What are you seeking? To see if there's anybody out there that's doing what? That's being just in their lifestyle. That is seeking the truth. And Jeremiah, if you would go out there and do that, if you would find a man, I would pardon. So what's happening here? Just like in 2 Chronicles, the running to and fro deals with what? A searching out in order to demonstrate something or to discover something. In 2 Chronicles, God is searching to demonstrate His power. In Jeremiah, He's saying, go out and search in order to discover something. And I will do it. Alright? Now go to the book of Amos. Amos is right several books after the book of Daniel. You got Joel, you got Amos. Amos chapter 8. This is our last reference here. Look at verse 11. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord God, and I will send a famine in the land, not a famine of bread, nor a thirst for water, but of hearing the words of the Lord. Verse 12. And they shall wander from sea to sea, and from the north even to the west. Now here's our phrase. And they shall run to and fro to seek the word of the Lord, and shall not what? Find it. So what's happening in Amos chapter 8 and verse 12? People are what? Searching. What are they searching for? The Word of God. So folks, as we go back to the book of Daniel, with that understanding of that Hebrew word translated into our English translation with run to and fro, as we go back here, and Daniel writes, "But thou, Daniel, shut up the word, seal the book, even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro." All right, what are the many doing then? They're searching. All right, now the question is, what are they searching for? Well, that answer is given in Daniel chapter 12 and verse 4. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increase, or knowledge shall be great. Now there is some debate whether this is just talking about knowledge in general, and would you not agree with me that knowledge, so-called, has exploded in our day? I mean, you can't keep up with it anymore. But I don't think that this is the knowledge that's being talked about, because in the Hebrew text, it's not here in our Bible, there is an article before the word knowledge. It is the knowledge, a specific type of knowledge, shall be increased. So what is going on here is this, I believe. There are going to be many that are going to search out the understanding or the knowledge of what? The book of Daniel. Because you're going to find later on that he's going to tell Daniel, because Daniel's got a lot of questions about this revelation, and God says to him, now look, I'm not going to give you that understanding, but I want you to know that those words are going to be preserved all the way to the time of the end, and they will understand. You don't understand, but they will understand. Look at what it says in verse 9. Go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed until when? The time of the end. Now folks, that understanding of the book of Daniel was going to involve another great event, and that is the incarnation of the Son of God. And the Son of God was going to give additional revelation in which, in the Gospels, and we're not going to look at it, but in the Gospel, He quotes from this book and gives us additional understanding of what's going to be happening in those last days, in that time of trouble. And in fact, folks, Jesus Himself delivers additional abundant knowledge of those days to what apostle? John, and we have it written down in a book called The Revelation of who? Jesus Christ. And do you not agree that the book of Revelation just opens up the book of Daniel? And so, folks, our knowledge today of what God is doing on the earth is much greater than whose? Than Daniel's. And so when he says, Daniel, now you shut up the words, you seal the book, he's saying to Daniel, you write these words down, you write it on parchment that will be preserved, you make copies of that book, you seal that book even to the time of the end so that those words would be preserved and be around all the way to the end of those days. And I want you to know, Daniel, this is your comfort, that though you don't understand all these things, God's people are going to search those things out, and their understanding would become much what? Greater and increased as the days go by. Because, folks, Daniel started this whole seeking of God because he was concerned about who? His people. And wouldn't that be a great comfort to you for God to promise you that though you don't understand everything, I want you to know that when the time comes and they need it, they'll understand it. And it will comfort and strengthen them. Now, believer, haven't you found that true in your own life? Haven't you found verses that you knew, I mean, you'd have read them 100 times, but when you needed them, the illumination was there, and it comforted and it strengthened you. They took on new understanding in your life. And so Daniel is given the comfort that the details of the revelation would be known to his Jewish posterity and unknown to him, to Gentile believers, right when they need it. Now, Daniel, at the end of that, had been intently listening to who? An angel. In fact, that angel was introduced, go back to chapter 11, look at verse 2. We had a whole chapter in chapter 10 that gave us the circumstances and the setting up of this vision. And this angel comes down and is going to give him a subset of the book that is in heaven. And in verse 2 of chapter 11, he says, "Now will I show thee the truth." So Daniel is listening to that truth, and he is intensely what? What would you be doing if an angel was giving you revelation from God? I hope you would be what? Listening. You wouldn't be going, "Wonder what we're having for dinner." I hope you'd be listening. I hope you wouldn't be looking around, you know, seeing what's around you. I hope you'd be listening. Especially since you had been given a charge to write it down. But now the revelation's over. Daniel, shut up the words. Seal the book. It's only going to be for the time of the end, and there's going to be a great searching, and the knowledge of this book will be given and illuminated as the days go by. Pause. And Daniel looks around. And here's this angel standing right there before him. He looks around, and he notices the banks of the river, and he notices that on one side of the bank of a river is a who? An angel. On the other side of the bank of the river is an angel. Okay, he notices that. And then he goes right back to that being that first caused the fright in him, verse 6, a man clothed in what? Linen. Now, we know who that man is because he was described to us. Go back to chapter 10 and look at verse 4. He was described to us as Daniel was by the great river. Verse 5, he lifted up his eyes. And remember that we made note that Daniel probably was laid out on the ground, but at any point he's there, he looks up. So here's this being, he's not on the banks of the river, he looks up and he sees this being, and behold, a certain man clothed in what? In linen. Well, what does he look like? Well, he has loins girt about with fine gold. He has a body like beryl. He has a face like the appearance of lightning. He had eyes like lamps of fire. He had arms and feet like colored to polished brass. He had the voice of his words were like the voice of a multitude. And how did Daniel respond to that? Well, all the men that were with him shook and fled. Verse 8, Daniel was left alone, saw the great vision, and all the strength left out of him. And he was on a deep sleep with his face toward the ground. Now, folks, when we went through that, we paralleled that description to what book? Revelation chapter 1. Who is this person? It is Christ Himself. It is God. So he turns his eyes back to this person, and that person's never moved. Where are they at? They are not on the banks of the river. He's not on either side of the river. He is hovering. He is risen above the waters of that river. Look in Daniel 12, verse 6. And one said to the man clothed in linen, which was, what's the next word? Upon the waters of the river. Now get the picture. Here you got this angel, you got another angel on the bank of the river, you got another angel on the other side. In the middle of them is the Son of God, and he is elevated above all of that. So who is sovereign? He is. And the angel asked the Son of God a question. Isn't that amazing? The angel would have looked up. Probably the one that was talking to Daniel. We're speculating here, but probably this is the angel asking the question. It is given in sharp contrast to verse 8 when who asked the question? When Daniel asked the question. And this angel turns to the Son of God who is above those waters in between two what? Two angels. His eyes are like lightning, flame of fire, radiating the glory of God, the brightness of His glory. And the angel says unto him, how long shall be to the end of these wonders? Isn't it fascinating the angels are curious? You know, it's all right to ask the Lord a question. That's pretty bold, isn't it? Here's this angel, and this is what he asked him. It's written, it's translated here, how long shall it be to the end of these wonders? I'm going to paraphrase for you this way. How long is the duration of this time of trouble? Now, wouldn't you want to know that? If it was as awful and more awful than we could describe last Lord's Day morning, and many of you walked out with just kind of a feeling in the midst of your stomach like, whoa! What a time in awful warfare upon the face of this earth. Wouldn't you want to know the time limitation of that day? Because the Lord had already promised that. Look in verse 45 of chapter 11. He shall plant the tabernacles of His palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, yet He shall come to His end. There is an end. All right, so what is the time limitation of this awful time period? Well, Christ answers with an oath. He holds up his right hand. Now, picture me as if I'm Christ. That's difficult, okay, because I'm not hovering over the waters. But just picture in your mind, here's this glorious being. He raises up a right hand, and then he raises up his other hand. So how many hands are being raised up? Two. And he cries out. Remember, his voice was like the multitude of waters. He cries out these words. He swears by him that liveth forever that it shall be for a time, times and a half. Now, folks, I want to know why he swore. Why would the Son of God swear about this? Give an oath about this? I mean, in fact, folks, in our New Testament, He warns us against what? Swearing. He says, let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. Now, let me ask you this question. If Christ had not sworn, would it have happened? What if he had just told the angel, time, times, and a half? Would it have happened? So why did he swear? And folks, the answer to that question is given to us in the book of Hebrews. And I want you to turn there to Hebrews chapter 6, because this is going to give us an enlightenment of why he did this. Folks, when God swears with an oath, it is for a reason. And it's not for His sake. It is for our sakes. I want you to note here, in verse 15 of Hebrews 6, let's go up to verse 13. For when God made promise to Abraham, because he could swear by no greater, he swore by himself, saying, surely, blessing I will bless thee, and multiplying I will multiply thee. All right, now let me ask you this. Could he have just told Abraham, look, I'm going to multiply you? Would it have happened? Yes. But he didn't. He swore by himself. All right, why did he do that? All right, look at verse 15. And so, after he had patiently endured, he obtained the promise, a promise that was backed up with an oath. Verse 16. For men verily swear by the greater. And an oath is for what? Confirmation. Now the word confirmation here means oaths are a legal guarantee. I mean, folks, when we go in the courtrooms today, I assume they still do this. They put their hand on the what? On the Bible, and they swear by that Bible that they're going to tell the what? The whole truth. Well, why would they do that? They are proclaiming to everyone around them that they are making a legal guarantee that they're going to say the what? The truth. All right. God Himself gave a promise, and verse 16 of Hebrews 6, He couldn't swear by anybody greater than Himself, so He swore by Himself, and He gave that oath for a legal guarantee to them. Who would the them be? Men swear by the greater, and men give oaths for confirmation to them, so that it ends all strife. Who's the them there? Folks, men swear with an oath to give a guarantee to other men. All right, verse 17. Wherein God, willing more abundantly to show unto the heirs of promise. Now, who are they? Who are the heirs of promise? Both Old and New Testament believers. God willing more abundantly to show unto the heirs of promise the immutability. That's a big technical word for the fact that God does not have the ability to change. He's unchangeable. So God gave a promise, unchangeable promise, or sometimes we use the word unconditional promise. He gave a promise, and that promise is sure because God can't what? He can't lie, but for our sakes, He made an oath so that it would end all debate within our soul of whether God would really do this or not. So God, verse 17, more abundantly to show unto the heirs of promise the immutability of His counsel, He confirmed it by a what? By an oath. Verse 18, for this purpose, that by two immutable things. Remember, immutable means what? Unchangeable. All right, now here's the question. What are the two things that are unchangeable here in this context? Folks, the two things that are immutable in this context is number one, the promise. And the other thing is the oath. So by two immutable things, because don't you understand, it is impossible for God to what? For God to lie. I mean, He could have just said, now look, in blessing, I'm going to bless you. You just give us the promise. That ought to be enough. But no, He wants to end all debate in our spirit. So He swears. I mean, it's impossible for God to lie, but He swears by Himself. So now, you don't only have one immutable thing, you have two immutable things to confirm that promise. So He says, verse 18, that by two immutable things in which it was impossible for God to lie. Now, why did He do that? So that we might have strong, what? Consolation. Because, folks, we have fled for refuge to lay hold upon the hope that is set before us, the hope and promise of Christ and His resurrection. We have that as an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, and which entereth into that within the veil, whether the forerunners for us entered, even Jesus. So, folks, here's why God took a promise. And He made that promise, though it's unchangeable. It's impossible for God to lie. He takes that promise and He gives it to His people. He comes along that promise and He confirms it with a what? With an oath. He can't change the oath. He's bound Himself to that oath. If He changes the oath, He's a what? He's a liar. And God can't lie. So you have these two unchangeable things so that when we go through trial like the Hebrews, in the book of Hebrews, when you go through trial for the faith of Jesus Christ, you have two strong, immutable things to give you comfort that would strengthen you to endure that affliction. All right, now let's go back to Daniel. Folks, why do you think God, the Son of God, did this with an oath? How much difficulty is it going to be a believer in the great tribulation period? Think it's going to be a piece of cake? You think it's going to be easy to watch your family die because you won't take the mark of the beast? You think it's going to be easy to watch the government take away your children because if you don't take the mark of the beast, you can't buy or sell and you're starving your family to death? You think it's going to be easy when you go from place to place and you beg for food and people won't give you the food because if they give you the food, they themselves would die? You think that's going to be easy? You think it's going to be easy to be without raiment and experience the heat and cold of nature? You think it's going to be easy to watch your stomach gnaw away at your flesh? And all you have to do is take this little mark and you would have all the meals that you would desire. You think that's going to be easy? You think it's going to be easy when there's war and disease? You think it's going to be easy when the Antichrist sets himself up in the temple of God and demands to be worshipped? Folks, I don't want to scare you, but how much medical science out there is it to make your life very uncomfortable by drugs? There are Russian-believing people who were put in psychiatric wards in Russia and given drugs because they're insane. They need help. What sane man would refuse a mark of a beast in order to eat? That's not sane. Folks, would you agree with me that those times are going to be hard? What do those people need? They need a word from God. They need to know how long they have to what? Endure. Folks, it is one thing to endure when you know at the end of so many days you're going to be let out. When you're in a hospital and you start feeling better, the first thing you want to know is what? Tell me, what's the first thing you want to know? When can I go home? Why are you doing that? Because you're sick and tired of all the poking and prodding and waking up and temperature taking and all the disturbances that go on while they tell you to rest. You want to know how much you have to endure. And when they say to you, oh, well, we're pretty sure you're going to be able to get out on Tuesday. What do you say? You say, oh, yuck. Wish I could hang around here. Have some more surgery. Now, what do you want to do? You get great what? Confidence that when that day comes, you're looking forward to your deliverance. All right. Folks, when that happens in the midst of that 7-year period, because how long does it last? Time, times, and a what? And we've already discovered that's how long? It's 3.5 prophetic years. Folks, when that happens, you're going to need a word from God on the duration of it so that you might what? Folks, you remember what Jesus said? Jesus said, unless those days were shortened, the elect might even be what? But folks, we not only have a word from God on it, that this time duration, what is the duration of this time of trouble? Well, it's a time, times, and a half. We only have a word from God. I mean, that ought to be enough, right? But no.
He goes through that 3.5 year time period is immutable. It's unchangeable. It will be exactly that time period. But now I'm going to come in with an oath. I'm going to swear by Him that liveth forever and ever, so that those believing people could have two assurances from a God who cannot lie. Do you think it's going to strengthen them? Do you think they're going to encourage each other with these words? Come on. 4 more months. 6 more months. Just a year. Jesus is coming. You think they're going to encourage them with that? Yes, because the wise will understand. But the wicked will not. And what's going to happen in that 3.5 year time period, verse 7, is that the power of the holy people are going to be scattered. Folks, what's going to happen during this time period is this, that evil is going to utterly shatter the people of God from the face of the earth. Jesus worded it this way in Luke 18 and verse 8, "Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, shall He find faith on the earth?" Folks, evil is going to spread its wickedness and it's going to exert all of its power to crush the testimony of Jesus Christ from all the earth. Will it succeed? Well, given the fact that God's people never die, I don't think so. Now Daniel, when he heard these things, verse 8, he didn't understand. Now folks, when I explained those verses, where did I go? I went to the New Testament. Daniel would have understood it was 3.5 years. That's given in previous Revelation. But he would not understand this about the revelation, verse 8. Oh my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? In other words, I'm paraphrasing again. How would this evil be brought to its end? If evil exalts herself, smattering, destroying the people of Christ from the face of the earth, then how would evil then be what? Be destroyed. That's a great question. And God's not going to tell Daniel the answer. You know the answer, don't you? How is the evil destroyed? With the brightness of His coming! Daniel would not have understood that. But God is going to give the similitude of an answer to Daniel's question, not to Daniel, but to future believing people. Verse 9. And He said, "Go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end." Daniel, you're not going to get the understanding. Daniel, you attend to your life. You're 85 some years of age. You be comforted concerning your people. It's going to be okay. I'm going to take care of that believing people whose names are written in the book. Verse 10. Here's what's going to happen. "Many shall be purified." Isn't that great? Many people are going to be saved. And made white. We call that sanctification. And they will be tried. They will suffer. Is that happening today? Is God saving people sanctifying people and trying them for His glory by suffering. Yes or no? Yes.
But folks, wicked people are going to do what? Folks, it's not going to get better. Don't believe all this stuff in the news that we're just trying to make a better world. It's not getting better. It's all glitz. It's all a show. It's all whitewash over the corruption that is bubbling underneath the surface. Men aren't getting better.
And those men are not going to understand specifically what book? Daniel. And they're not going to understand Revelation.
But the wise shall what? The wise shall understand, folks. Just like Daniel 11, that when Antiochus Epiphanes comes down and he says, now look, the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits, and they that understand shall instruct many. I mean, that's exactly what's going to happen in that great 3.5 years of time of trouble. There's going to be a lot of use of the book of Revelation, the book of Daniel, the book of Thessalonians, Matthew chapter 24 and 25. There's going to be a lot of usage of those passages. But folks, even though Daniel doesn't understand how evil is ultimately going to be destroyed, Jesus does give a hint that Daniel's not going to understand. And frankly, there's a lot of debate today about these two verses. But I'll give you my speculation. This we do know, that from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away and the abomination that makes desolate set up, there's how many days? 1,290 days. How many days in 3.5 years of prophetic years? 1,260 days. What's the difference? 30 days. What's happening? Whatever is happening, now this I can be dogmatic about, whatever is happening, it is another major event that is going to bring to an end the wickedness. Right? Because that's the question that was asked. Verse 12. Blessed is he that waits and comes to the 1,300 and how many days? 35 days. That's 45 more days. For a total of 75 days from the end of that 3.5 year time period. So we have two major events that are happening at specific chronological moments that are going to be happening in order to answer the question that Daniel asked. When will this evil be brought to an end? So folks, what is the answer to that? Well, the first 30 extra days could be that when Jesus comes back, Matthew 25, verses 31 through 45 say that He's going to judge the nations. He's going to set up a throne. He's going to bring the nations right there before Him, and He's going to judge them, and He's going to separate the goats from the what? From the sheep. Would you not agree with me that that would involve the process of putting it to an end, evil? Because what's He removing? What's He removing before the millennial? The goats. So the only people going into that millennial age are what? The sheep among those nations. Well, if that's true, what is the second event that happens 45 days later? Folks, that event could be the inauguration of the 1,000-year reign of Jesus Christ. Would you agree with me that that would put a stop to evil? Because Jesus is going to rule on the throne of David with a rod of iron. It's not going to be totally eradicated yet, but it is going to be radically restrained by the power of the Son of God, Jesus Christ. And so people are going to live a long time. And there's going to be a population explosion, and there's going to be foods all over the place. And if anybody doesn't like what Jesus says to do, He won't cause it to rain over there. Guess what people are going to do? They're going to get in line. Now, folks, I could be wrong on those two major events, but would you not agree that we do know that two major events are going to happen that are going to put an end to that man's rule? And Revelation says that when Jesus comes back, He's going to take that Antichrist and physically throw him into the lake of fire. So the answer to Daniel's question that he didn't understand, the answer is Jesus Christ. That's who's going to bring an end to all these things. And He's going to sit on that throne of David. So, how do we conclude? Verse 13. Go your way. Now, He's already told Daniel that. Verse 4. Go your way till the end, because you're going to what? Your body, Daniel, is going to rest in the grave, and your body is going to come out of the grave, and you're going to stand. You're going to stand where? In your appointed inheritance. Folks, did you know you have an appointed inheritance? I wonder what yours looks like. And stand in thy lot when? When are those Old Testament saints going to be raised? At the end of the days. So Daniel, be comforted and rest content about your people. I swear by an oath that I will limit their affliction in that day. Every believer whose name is written in the book will be preserved. I will not forsake them. I will strengthen them. Yea, I will cause them to stand by the word of my oath. And though evil looks like it will gain the upper hand, we will reign with Him. It's all ours. Joint heirs with Jesus Christ to an inheritance incorruptible, undefiled, fading not away, reserved in heaven for you who are kept by the power of God through faith unto salvation, ready to be revealed in the last